Hello everyone, and welcome to the Loopcast again. So first off today, we are going to be talking about Belgian foreign fighters. This is a really, really interesting topic, and I'm very excited to have a guest online, all the way from Belgium. So I want to introduce you to Peter van Oosting. And first of all, thank you so much for coming on the show, Peter.
Thank you. So you slightly mispronounced my name. It's van Oosting. Yeah.
Oystein, that's it. Thank you. It's
no problem.
Always that issue of getting foreign last names correct.
But no
worries. Welcome to the show, and thank you for staying up late to talk to us about this really interesting topic.
Mm-hmm.
So, Peter is a historian and scholar of Arab studies, and he blogs about Syria and Syria's jihad, as well as foreign fighters. And his blog is titled after his name. We will definitely put a link to the blog under this talk. And it has musings on Arabism, Islamicism, and history and current affairs. So we definitely would like our listeners to check out his work personally. So to start off, why don't we talk about what was your motivation at first to conduct this research on Belgian foreign fighters?
First question you'll have to ask me is what was my motivation to start tweeting about Syria in general? I've been in Syria in 2008, written two dissertations on Salah ad-Din al-Ayyubi, the guy who conquered Jerusalem on the Crusaders in 1187. And I wanted to visit all the places he conquered. He visited his tomb in Damascus, go on. And I made a bunch of friends there at that time. Spent 6 weeks there. When the war started, my Twitter account actually started out as something professional. But when the war started, I got more and more interested in what was going on in Syria. And I started following some big accounts. And that's how I've got involved.
And on your site, on your blog, you have this really, really high informative list on foreign fighters from Belgium. So with your startings by going to Syria and meeting people there and coming back and getting highly involved when the war started, how did you decide to really focus on this research of looking at specific individuals? And how did you go about that?
Well, basically, it all started, the whole foreign fighter stuff in Belgium and the Netherlands started when Harald Doornbos and me found a video via another Twitter user. And it was the first video in which you could hear clearly some guy speaking Dutch. And around the same time, there was a report by Eurojust that there were this many Dutch fighters, this many Belgian fighters in Syria, and I started getting interested in the matter. And that's, build up a database in over the end. Working together with a Belgian journalist, Guy van Vlierden, and at this time we identified quite a significant amount of Belgian foreign fighters.
And in your research and on your blog, you say that your research shows that at the moment, I know it continuously changes because there are a lot of battles going on there and ongoing fighting. At the moment, you're saying that there's about 385 foreign fighters from Belgium that have gone to Syria. And I'd like to discuss this a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
So, yes, no, I was just wondering how you came up with that exact number. It's almost baffling to me in one way, because as we keep on hearing here in the US, and then if you look at the UK as well, it seems like their intel communities, their communities that are watching these people can't even figure out their own numbers. So how did you get this really specific number?
Well, basically, my current research is based on the reports published by ICSR, most like by Aaron Zelin, actually, on the ICSR website. When they published this last numbers of the Belgians in Syria, they published a minimum and a maximum. And I just basically asked him, can I have access to the sources you're using? And he gave me access to his sources. And then I started adding my sources. Then I met Guy van Vlierden, and we added his sources. And that's basically how the database is built up. At this particular point, we've got how many? Just to give you a regular idea, date of birth, we've got highly detailed numbers.
And when you look at these cases that have gone to Syria, are you pulling any of it out of travel information? Is it more information that you're getting via social media like Twitter and Facebook? And I know you mentioned you're pooling together your research resources with the different researchers that have pooled together this number and their findings. Like, how detailed is the information that you can find on various individuals that have gone to Syria to fight?
Basically, on normal media, you can only find the highlights. You can see that there's one guy from, let's say, Rafael G. from Brussels left to Idlib, something like that. But there are no more details like that. If you start to dig in and start using social media sources, start receiving the official press releases, possibly he has an insight into other sources, I don't know. But now we came up with a most interesting database. And, well, for about, I would say, 40% of the cases, we have a Facebook account.
And then the other percentages, where would they be coming from?
Normal media. Just mentions. As I should say about my database, actually, our database, that there might be some doubles included. That's obvious. Some of them are indeed anonymous as we speak. We only have little details on them, but some of them are known by name, family name, age, where they went to school. We got about a lot of details.
Interesting. And then in your database and on your blog, you mentioned that you found that 60 Belgians who have gone to Syria have joined up with the Sharia for Belgium group.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you could explain this group for our listeners and give them an idea of who this group is, what their involvement in the conflict in Syria is, and give them a little background on the Sharia for Belgium group.
Yeah, be happy to do that. Actually, Sharia for Belgium has been one of the most active Salafist groups in Belgium since the mid-2000s. And basically, most of the members were already suspected of being radicalized Muslims. And there were some very heavy protests here in Belgium. For example, on the 11th of September 2012, against the video "The Innocence of Muslims," there were some protests against the veil ban here in Belgium, and they seem to have been playing quite an active role in recruiting for jihad in Syria.
And then you also mentioned in your blog that you show that there are 28 proven ties of Belgian foreign fighters to the Islamic State. So how did that happen as well? How did they join the Islamic State? Did they go directly to Syria to join the Islamic State, or did they end up in Syria and end up joining the Islamic State? How did this happen?
Most of the guys I mentioned there, they are in Syria for a longer time, so even before the Islamic State or ISIS even existed. A lot of them were they joined the ranks of Jaysh al-Muhajirin wal-Ansar, which actually still exists, the group. It was at that time led by a Chechen fighter. And there were a lot of these Belgians joining that group. There were a lot of them joining Jabhat al-Nusra, some of them in Sukkur al-Sham. But since ISIS came along, and especially after the ideological drift between Jabhat al-Nusra and ISIS, let's say from early summer last year, a lot of these guys joined ISIS, and they're still with them. And it's a strange coincidence noticing that a lot of these ISIS guys, Belgians, are also affiliated with Sharia for Belgium.
Interesting. So it's almost like two groups melding into one or having connections.
Wouldn't say that, because other of these guys, they're still connected with Jabhat al-Nusra, so it's a bit of a weird thing. but most of them are ISIS.
Okay. And then in your blog, you mentioned that you found that 20 of these fighters that have gone overseas are women, and I know there's been not as much published on women that are going to Syria to join the jihad, and I was wondering if we could look at that a bit and what these women's roles are in Syria.
Well, it's basically not a lot about it I can say, but there is one woman who pretends to be fighting, actually, one of these Belgian women, and most of them they just joined their husband, or they come there and they join jihad in another way, you know, the family life, and they take care of the children, also take care of children of killed foreign fighters. So yeah, it's basically the role of a woman. I don't know.
And do a lot, if they're single women, from what I've read, a lot of them go to Syria and they're married quite quickly to one of the foreign fighters in whatever group it might be. Is that something you're finding as well, because of the strict Islamic law that is observed in the region?
It might play a role indeed, yeah. I don't think if you're a young woman, let's say the age of around 20, and you go to Syria, can't just stroll around. You'll have to do something with your life. For example, one of the most known foreign Belgian fighters in Syria is Brian de Mulder. He got married recently to a quite young girl named Sarah from Holland.
And do we know more about what their life is like now that they're married, or do we not have that information?
I very much doubt that you will even post that information on Facebook or whatever channel. No, they don't talk about it.
And when you found out about the marriage, was this through Facebook, social media, or how did you find out about this coming together?
Actually, via normal media. Websites from Dutch and Belgian newspapers.
And then I know that you say that you have found 113 foreign fighters that have been clearly identified, and you talk in your research that it's been hard because, as you mentioned earlier in this talk, there might be people that have been doubled up in there because, as you mentioned in your blog, they have the kunya names, and I was wondering if we could talk about this a little bit and how it's created difficulty for you to, you know, find if it's one person or if it's two separate people, if it's one person that's using different kunya names. So I was wondering if you could explain this a bit for our listeners.
Just having my database here with me, at the first glance of it, I see in the first six rows, I see five people with double kunyas, totally different kunyas. Most of the people we did know were actually only known by kunyas like Abu Hamza, Abu Atik, Abu Jihad al-Biljiki, Kitab al-Sunnah, go on. We have a lot of anonymous people in our database as well, just based on, for example, the people from Mechelen I mentioned, they're just based on street rumors here around in Mechelen. If we talk about a guy called Abu Ibrahim al-Biljiki, we have no ID, but we know that he's affiliated with ISIS because he's got a Facebook account affiliated with ISIS. That's basically how the whole thing is made up. And from time to time, people get identified, and then we can scratch or add another line. As I said, it's really difficult to keep an actual track on everything that's going on.
Definitely. And when you're looking at foreign fighters, what have you seen as far as how have they traveled to Syria? Have they gone through Turkey? Through your research, what are you finding? Have they been recruited at home? Or have they been recruited from social media? What types of patterns are you seeing in that?
Well, as I said before, there is a significant group of Sharia for Belgium guys who left for Syria. So I think there was definitely some recruiting going on in the former Sharia for Belgium group, although the group doesn't exist anymore officially. Then there must be some recruiting going on via social media. I've been talking to guys, and they said that they have been contacted several times through direct messages on Facebook to get them to Syria. So there are some people who are definitely from Belgium looking in some way to get there. Direct recruiting from within the Islamic State is possible. There was one quite detailed article about it a few weeks ago, I think. But I don't see a lot of evidence about it, but mainly what appeals these guys is the ongoing slaughter by the regime, actually, basically. And quite recently, the surprisingly success of the Islamic State, first by re-establishing the caliphate, their blitzkrieg in Iraq, now their current, between brackets, successes against the Kurds in Iraq, their recent successes in Syria against the al-Assad regime. I think those things are most appealing right now for these guys to come over.
And would you say that maybe at the beginning, the majority of people who went over was to help overthrow the regime of Bashar al-Assad? Was that sort of the main concern at the starting of the civil war? And now it's changed slightly with, as you said, the Islamic State's...
In the beginning, I think it was mainly, for the most of these guys, it was mainly some idealism. Don't forget that a lot of these guys who are still there, a lot of these Belgians, they were there in 2012 already. And yeah, they just saw the whole thing evolving from being just an uprising to a war within a war, actually.
And I was wondering if we could look at, so you talked about the type of sources that you've been getting, but what's the methodology that you use to create this database? How do you go about this? You have all these names. As we mentioned, some of them are Cunha names, so we have an individual that might be in there three or four times, but it's one person. So what is your methodology about putting this all together and pulling out, yes, this is one individual, or this is more than one? Like, how do you go about that with all this information that's been thrown at you?
Well, that would be the main effort of he, actually. He's incredible in searching out all the details. And as I said before, he might have access to other sources than just Facebook or Twitter. But he's got, the last time he updated our database, it was incredibly detailed. He added for about 50 people the exact date of birth. Just one example. I think he can even give their social security number if he wanted to. And I have no idea how he comes by all these details. I'm very sorry.
Yeah, he's a gem to have. That's amazing. Like I said, we always hear this in the media, this idea that even our U.S. intel and people that are analysts that do this every day, they can even come up with the exact number, if even close to an exact number, of people that may have gone to Syria. So it's very impressive, the numbers that you have in your database and in your research. So taking this talk to another level, I was wondering, why does Belgium seem to have such a concentration of foreign fighters who've gone to Syria? I mean, we look at other countries, yes, the numbers are speculative, but still it seems like for Belgium you have a greater number for a country that honestly is not quite large. So what are the reasons for that?
Well, I do have a theory about it, but people won't like it back here. But actually, in the 60s and 70s, we invited vast group of Muslims over here from Morocco, Turkey, go on, to come and work here in the industry. First generation all went well. Second generation went a bit more difficult because at a certain point, Flanders and Wallonia, Belgium in total actually, they changed their economics from heavy industry, and basically most of the kids of the second and third generation, maybe even the fourth right now, they were left in some kind of a vacuum. And there has always been some kind of latent racism here in Belgium. You can notice it. If you generally talk to people here in Belgium, they always, not all of them, but some of them, they don't really like Arabs or Islam, right, whatsoever. another factor was, for example, when I was teaching Arabic in the early 2000s in the prisons of Mechelen and Leuven in Belgium, 90% of my class was made up out of Berbers and Moroccans and Arabs, sorry, wanted to learn Arabic because they wanted to study Islam. I saw a lot of these guys over these months getting more and more involved in Islamic matters and getting more and more involved in whatever the world was doing against Islam. And I saw some of them. I saw them radicalized, actually, in prison. And not that I'm saying that all of the Belgians who are fighting and who are in Syria are ex-convicts, but I do think there's a most important part of the radicalization of some people going along inside the prisons.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've spent time in the UK, and you do see, there's this theory by Mark Sageman that first generations of countries who don't really have an identity that fits in with the country that they were born in. So if you use the UK example, maybe there's a person that's been born in the UK, is a UK citizen, but their family is from Pakistan or Afghanistan or whatever country we're using, so to speak, that there's this identity crisis and that they're trying to find their identity and they don't quite fit in with the country from their parents' origin, and they don't quite fit in with, say, the UK, if we're using the UK example. And I mean, I've witnessed it with my own eyes that this first generation tends to almost go overboard, where even their parents are saying, wow, you're more Pakistani than I am, and sometimes they go deeper into religion. And do you see that playing in Belgium as well?
Yeah, sure. That's actually basically an addition to what I just said. It's mostly the Muslim identity. It's not so much an identity as being a Moroccan or Turkish or Algerian or Tunisian, but it's basically being a Muslim, being part of the Ummah, and that's what drives them.
So that's a common factor I see that you're seeing with your research. So, looking at all of this as a whole, so Belgium has all of these foreign fighters. I mean, what does this mean for Belgium? I mean, are these people going to come back to Belgium? Is the country enforcing new laws or restrictions on people returning? What does this mean for the future of your country?
It means right now that there's been, well, general unrest, I think, amongst the population here. But basically also, I don't mind what's going on in Syria. It's still living on as well. But yeah, people came back, and people will get convicted on September 29th. That's actually when the process will start against Sharia for Belgium, and involving a lot of people who were actually killed in Syria already. So it does mean a thing here. Not saying that everybody is caring about it, but it's something that lives. And for the politics, for example, there was recently a call by one major Belgian politician to install some homeland security here in Belgium as well.
And how receptive has the community as well as the rest of the government? I mean, are they wanting to start installing better homeland security? Are they still not sure? How is that being received, that idea?
I have no idea yet, because we're just installing a new government right now. We just had elections and a pretty hard formation of a new government.
So it's still going to be, time will tell, I guess.
Yeah, indeed.
Well, thank you for coming on the show, Peter. It was really fantastic to hear about your research and your database. And as I mentioned, for our listeners, we will definitely post the link to this so that they can look at what you've come up with. But thank you so much for spending your evening with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.